If they discover you were a spy... His mouth felt dry as sand. It wouldn't be a merciful execution.
So be it.
No.
He crossed the space between them in three strides, pulling her into his arms, his lips pressing against her hair.
No. I refuse to turn you over to be slaughtered. I'll damned well let them feed me to the sea before I ever agree to that. I love you too much.
And because Arin knew she was brave enough to sacrifice herself whether he willed it or not, he added,
If they learned the truth about you, the last thing they'd do is help your people. They'll force me to ally formally with Valcata, and what would happen? I'm not sure Maradrina would survive it.
Her shoulders started to shake, and then sobs tore from her throat.
It's impossible. Impossible to save both. It always has been.
Maybe not. Arin pushed her toward the bed. I need you to stay here and keep up your performance.
Lara wiped a hand across her cheek. What are you going to do? Stopping with his hand on the door, Arin turned to look at his wife.
Your father sent you to Ithacana for a purpose. He failed. But I also brought you here for a reason, Lara, and I think it's time to see if my gambit worked.
She didn't stop Arin as he exited, his long strides eating up the corridors of the palace as he formed the words, a speech he'd used countless times, but now turned to a different purpose. Reaching the council chambers, Arin extracted his key, unlocked the door, and entered. Conversation froze, then Anna said,
Nana sent word, storm season is over. War tides has begun.
There was a shifting and gathering in the room, every one of the commanders and seconds present now keen to return to their watch, to prepare to repel their enemies, whoever they might be. A need to be through with this meeting. But Arin wasn't through with them.
There's one more matter we need to discuss, he said, the tone of his voice causing all heads to turn. Or rather, finish discussing. And that is the matter of the plight of the Maradrinian people.
What's there to say? Aster said, exchanging a chuckle with Mara. They made their bed.
As did we.
The smile fell away from Aster's face.
16 years ago, Ithacana signed a treaty of peace with Maradrina and Herendel, a treaty that both of those kingdoms have held to, neither of them attacking our borders in the intervening period. Our terms with Maradrina have all been met. They provided me with my lovely wife, and we have eased the costs of using the bridge.
I assume you're driving to a point, Your Grace?
Mara said.
The terms have been met, Arin interrupted, but the question of the nature of the agreement between our two nations remains unanswered. Is it, as Commander Mara so eloquently described, a business contract, where Ithacana has paid Maradrina for peace, or is it an alliance, where our two kingdoms use the terms of the treaty to foster a relationship beyond the exchange of services and products and coins?
No one spoke.
The people of Maradrina are starving. Little of their land is suited to produce, and of that which is, more than half rests fallow for lack of hands to work it. The wealthy are still able to import, but the rest? Hungry, desperate, all while we, their so-called allies, do business with their enemy, filling Valcatan holds with the goods Maradrina desperately needs because the Valcatans pay the most. Sitting idly by while Valcatan ships deny Maradrina the steel they've rightfully paid for. No wonder they call this treaty a farce.
What's happening in Maradrina is Silas's doing, Anna said. Not ours.
It is Silas's doing, but are we any better for sitting back and watching while innocent children go to their graves when we have the power to save them? Silas is no more the sum of his kingdom than I am the sum of ours, and neither of us is immortal. There is a larger picture.
Just what are you suggesting, Arin?
Anna asked, her voice toneless.
I'm suggesting Ithacana demand Valcata drop its blockade, and should they refuse, that they be denied port at Southwatch, that we prove ourselves allies to Maradrina.
The room broke into a flurry of voices, Aster's the loudest of all.
These sound like your wife's words, Your Grace.
Do they really?
Arin leveled the man with a glare. How long have I been pushing for us to form unions with other kingdoms so that our people have opportunities beyond war? For us to turn Ithacana into something more than just an army viciously guarding its bridge? How long did my mother push for it before me? These are not Lara's words. Though, in a way, they were. Because before, he'd only cared about protecting his own kingdom, about how Ithacana might benefit from an alliance. Now Arryn saw both sides, and he believed he was a better man for it. But to have an alliance that would allow our people these opportunities, we cannot just take. We have to give something in return. Maradrina's plight? It's an opportunity to show Ithacana's worth. Our worth.
Is this to be a proclamation, then? Aster spat. For us to risk our own children and have no say in the risking?
If Arryn could have made it in order, he would have. For no reason other than that he would be the one to bear the guilt if things went wrong. But such was not Ithacana's way. We vote. Slow nods, then Emrah's mother said,
All right, then. Hands for those in favor?
Hers went up immediately, as did Emrah's and four of the other younger commanders. Including Arryn's vote, that made 7, and he needed 9. It was one of the reasons he hadn't asked Lara to come back here with him. Odd numbers ensured the vote wouldn't hang, and having her absent meant no one could hold her accountable. Several of the old guard, including Aster, stepped back, shaking their heads. But Arryn almost fell over in surprise when Mara lifted her hand. Seeing his shock, the commander of Northwatch said,
Just because I question you doesn't mean I don't believe in you, boy.
All who remained to cast their vote was his sister. Anna trailed a finger over Southwatch, her brow furrowed.
If we do this, it will mean the destruction of our relationship with Valcata. It means war for Ithacana.
Arryn cast his gaze over the replica of his kingdom. Ithacana has always been at war, and what do we have to show for it?
We're alive. We have the bridge.
Don't you think it's time we fight for something more? Anna didn't answer, and sweat trickled down Arryn's back as he waited for his twin to cast her vote. Waited to see if she could move past her distrust of Lara and Maradrina. If she'd risk taking a chance, this leap of faith. If she'd fight at his side the way she always had. Anna gave her island one last affectionate pat, and then she nodded once.
I swore long ago to fight by your side, no matter the odds. Now is no different. Count Southwatch, in.
Eight weeks later, Lara clunked her mug against Jor's over the fire pit, shrieking with laughter when a log burst, spraying sparks at their hands. For the first time in living memory, the months of respite from storms hadn't meant war for Ithacana, though it had felt as though the entire nation had held its breath until the season had been declared over. After a strongly worded warning from Arryn to drop the blockade or risk losing the right to trade at the Southwatch market, which the Valcottan Empress had ignored, Ithacana had driven the Valcottan Navy ships lurking around Southwatch back, allowing Maradrinian vessels full access. Arryn had then proceeded to load Ithacana's own vessels full of food and supplies, which were delivered into Ventzia and distributed to the poor. Again and again, Arryn had used Ithacana's coffers and resources to supply the belabored city, until the Maradrinian people were cheering his name in the streets. Whether it was because he'd lost the support of his people for war, or because Lara hadn't given him the intelligence he'd needed, her father hadn't lifted a hand against Ithacana. Neither had Amarid, which still seemed to be licking its wounds. And now that the storms were rolling in, both kingdoms had lost their chance for another year. Or perhaps forever, if the strength of the relationship between the Ithacanian and Maradrinian people were any indication. Not that there hadn't been consequences. The Empress had responded with a letter telling Arryn he deserved whatever he got for betting down with snakes, turning her armada entirely to merchant transport in an attempt to further undercut the bridge's revenues, which were already halved by the loss of trade with the southern nation. The coffers were drained, but in Laura's mind, both Maradrenian and Ithaconian civilians were alive. They were safe. Nothing else mattered. She had done her duty as both princess and queen.
"Your brother should be passing midwatch right now," Jor said, handing her another full mug of ale. "Tide's low. We could take a stroll through the bridge and pay him a visit, have a little family reunion."
Laura rolled her eyes. "I'll pass." Her brother, Carys, had finally convinced her father to allow him to attend university in Herondale to study philosophy, and he was traveling through the bridge with his entire retinue of courtiers and attendants to start his first semester. One of the male runners had come ahead of them, and he said the party looked like a flock of birds, everyone bedecked in silks and jewels.
"Let's go," Arryn murmured into her ear. "I'm looking forward to a night with you in a real bed."
"You're going to fall asleep the second your head hits the pillow." She relished the rising heat of desire between her legs, and his fingers traced along the veins in her arms. She'd stayed with him at the barracks all through wartides. But the narrow soldier's cot had not been conducive to romance, although they'd made do.
"I'll take that bet. Come on."
He led her out into the gentle rain, the worst of the squall already over. One of Arryn's soldiers was outside, and he looked at her with surprise.
"Thought you already went up to the house." "Not yet. Jor kept refilling my mug. I expect they'll be out of ale by the time your shift is up." "Thought I saw you was all."
The big guard frowned and shrugged.
"They're signaling for a supply pickup at the pier, so we might have more drink arriving." "I'll send someone down from the house,"
Arryn assured the man, tugging on Laura's arm.
"Thank you, Your Grace."
But Arryn was already towing her up the path, the chain in the cove rattling upward behind them. Mud squelched beneath their boots as they made their way up the trail to the house they'd barely visited over the prior 8 weeks, neither of them able to relax enough to step away from the barracks.
"A bath first," Laura said, thinking dreamily about the steaming hot springs.
"You smell like soldier."
"You're not so fresh yourself, Majesty."
Arryn swung her up into his arms, the lantern light dancing wildly where it hung from her hand. She twisted in his grip, wrapping her legs around his waist. A soft moan escaped her lips as she pressed against him, his hands gripping her ass. Laura kissed him hard, sliding her tongue into his mouth, and then laughed when he slipped, the lantern falling from her hands and going dark.
"Don't you dare drop me." "Then quit distracting me," he growled, "or I'll be forced to take you in the mud."
She slid to the ground and took his hand, leading him at a perilous run up the slope until she caught sight of Arryn's cat, Vitex, sitting on the front step, tail twitching angrily.
"What are you doing out here?"
Arryn reached for the cat and it hissed and leapt away, limping slightly as it bolted into the trees. Laura watched him go.
"He's hurt." "The female he's been chasing probably got a piece of him. He likely deserved it."
Catching her by the waist, Arryn lifted her up the stairs and shoved open the door to the house. It was dark.
Not like Eli, not to set out a lamp.
Laura's skin prickled as she stared into the yawning blackness. Arryn had sent word up to the house that wartides was over, instructing Eli to select an expensive bottle of wine from the cellar for his mother and aunt. But the Ithaconian boy never shirked his duties.
"Maybe he drank the wine instead,"
Arryn murmured, raining kisses onto her throat, his hands finding her breasts.
"We'll do him good."
"He's 14. The house was silent, which wasn't precisely unusual, but there was something about the nature of the silence that rubbed Laura the wrong way, as though no one breathed.
"Exactly. Do you know the sorts of things I was doing at 14?
Laura stepped away, listening.
"I should check on him."
An aggrieved sigh exited Arryn's throat.
"Laura, relax. The storms are here and they will do their duty."
Pulling her into his arms, he kissed her, slowly, deeply, driving all thought from her head as he gently pushed her down the dark corridor into their room, where, thankfully, there was a lamp burning. The yellow flame, pushing back the darkness, eased Laura's agitation, and she let her head fall back as her husband's teeth grazed her neck, feeling the faint breeze from the open window.
Bathe later.
No, you stink. Get outside, and I'll be there in a moment. Grumbling, he shucked off his tunic and greaves, tossing both on the floor, starting toward the antechamber and the door to the courtyard beyond. Peeling off her hooded cloak, Laura hung the damp garment on a hook to dry, and was unfastening the top lace of her tunic when her heart skittered, her eyes falling on a letter with a familiar seal. Next to it, a knife twin to the one at her waist, sat in a small pile of crimson sand, its rubies glittering in the light. The knife Arryn had thrown on the docks in Ventzia. Dread filled her stomach as she walked over to the table, picking the heavy paper up with numb fingers and breaking the wax.
Dearest Laura, even in Ventzia we have heard talk of the affection between the Ithacanian king and his new queen, and how it fills our heart to know that you have, however improbably, found love in your new home. Please accept our most sincere well wishes for your future, however short that future may be. Father.
Arryn, why wasn't this letter delivered at the barracks? Who brought it? No answer. A scuffle of motion, a muffled curse. Whirling, she reached for the knife at her waist, then froze. Arryn was on his knees on the far side of the room. A hooded figure, dressed in clothing identical to Laura's own, held a glittering blade to his throat. And beneath the bed next to them, a young man's hand protruded, fingers covered in drying blood. Eli.
Hello, little sister,
a familiar voice said, and the woman reached up and pulled back her hood.
Mary Lynn.
The name croaked out of Laura's throat, her chest a riot of emotion at seeing her sister again, even as she knew what the other woman's presence meant. Beautiful, with golden blonde hair. Mary Lynn had been the noble woman on the ship Emra had boarded.
Laura?
Arryn started to struggle, snapping Laura out of her trance. Don't move, Laura warned him. Her blade will be poisoned.
You do know my tricks.
Let him go.
We both know that's not likely to happen, little cockroach.
The old nickname burned in her ears, her eyes searching for a way to disarm Marilyn without getting Arryn killed. But there was none.
Who is this woman?
Laura is my little sister. My lying, thieving, little bitch of a sister.
The words were a slap to the face.
Mary Lynn, I came here to spare you.
Liar. You stole what was rightfully mine, then left me to rot in the desert.
Do you have any idea how long it took me to get to Ventzia, to explain to Father what you'd done?
I did it to protect you.
Laura the martyr.
Mary Lynn's lip turned up in a sneer.
Only I saw through to your true intentions, you lying whore.
Laura stared at her, dumbfounded. The letters she'd left in Sarhina's pocket had explained everything, her father's intention to have the rest of them killed, that Laura faking their deaths and then taking Marilyn's place as queen of Ithacana was the only way to save all their lives, except for perhaps her own. She'd given them their freedom. He was going to kill our sisters. It was the only way. Why don't you understand?
I understand perfectly.
Mary Lynn shifted the blade pressed to Arryn's throat, angling the tip upward.
Do you think I didn't know that Father intended to kill the rest of you? Do you think I cared?
This wasn't her sister. It couldn't be. Mary Lynn had always been the sweetest, the kindest, the one who needed to be protected. The best actress.
You said your sisters were dead.
Arryn's voice jerked her back into the moment.
What now? Has she been keeping secrets? Marilyn stroked his cheek with her free hand, laughing as he recoiled.
Allow me to bring you into the fold, Majesty. No one forced Laura to come to Ithacana to spy. She chose to. Except chose isn't even a strong enough word. Laura conspired against us all in order to ensure she would be Queen of Ithacana, so that she would have the glory of throwing your people on Maradrenian blades. That's not true. That's the woman you married, Majesty. A liar, like none I've ever known. Worse than that, she's a murderer. I've seen her kill, maim, torture. All in ice-cold blood. All practice for what she intended to do to your people. That part was true, painfully and horribly true. We all did it, Marilyn. None of us had a choice. Her older sister rolled her eyes. There was always a choice. Her eyes turned on Auron. What do you think he would have done in the same position? Do you think he'd have slaughtered an innocent man just to save himself? No. Selfish little cockroach, always putting herself first. Although I can see why you decided to remain around after you plunged the knife in his back. She trailed a finger down Auron's bare chest. What a prize he is. They didn't tell us that during our lessons at the compound. I might have put him through his paces a few times myself before slitting his throat. Fury seared through Laura's chest, and she unclipped her knife from its jeweled hilt, though the thought of hurting her sister made her sick. Don't touch him. Marilyn pursed her lips. Why? Because he's yours. For one, he's rightfully mine. Two, even if I intended to leave him alive, which I don't, do you really think he's going to want anything to do with you now that he understands what kind of woman you are? When he finds out what you've done? I've done nothing. Reaching into her pocket, Marilyn extracted a heavy piece of parchment edged with gold. No. Recognize this, Your Majesty? Marilyn held it in front of Auron's face. You wrote it last fall in response to my father's request. You hold true to the spirit of the 15-year treaty. Not the most charitable of responses, although I suppose you did deliver in that end. Not possible. She'd destroyed all the pages. There is a type of ink that is invisible until sprayed with another agent. At that point, it becomes quite visible. If you look in Laura's quarters, I'm certain you'll find a jar of it, somewhat depleted. Marilyn flipped the letter around, and Laura could do nothing as Auron took in line after line of her neat writing, laying out every one of Ithacana's secrets. A strategy to infiltrate the bridge that was damning in its details. She'd brought Ithacana to its knees. Laura. Auron's eyes burned into hers, and the anguish in them was like having her heart carved out of her chest. I didn't. She had. I wrote it before I knew the truth. Before he'd risked his life to save hers. Before he'd taken her into his bed. Before he'd trusted her with everything. I thought I'd destroyed all the copies. This is a mistake. I love you. She'd never said it before. Never told him she loved him. Why had she never said it before? You love me. His voice was hollow. Or were you only pretending to? How tragic this is. The clock chimed, punctuating Marilyn's words. Though I suspect it is about to get so much worse, given that Carius's party of courtiers has crossed paths with a weapon shipment from Herondale. A horn sounded, a call for aid, then another, and another, until the notes were nothing more than a garbled mix of noise. Those courtiers exited piers on Ayla and Gamire Islands and attacked your guard posts from the rear, disabling their shipbreakers, so that Amaridian vessels loaded with hundreds of our soldiers could land unmolested. Even now, many of them are moving on to North and Southwatch Islands to attack them from the rear. And we have men using Ithacana's own signal horns to ensure no one will come to their aid. That's only the beginning, of course.
Laura's instructions were quite detailed, especially in how we might take midwatch. Panic flared in Auron's eyes, and she knew what he was thinking. All his soldiers, all his friends were sitting in the barracks, their guard down. Marilyn continued to prattle, but Laura's mind raced. If they could get down to the barracks, maybe they could get the chain closed in time, send a signal to Southwatch warning them. But that was impossible unless she disarmed Marilyn. Don't do this. Don't be our father's pawn any longer. Her sister's face darkened. I'm no one's pawn. Aren't you? You do his bidding, and for what? Everything we were told as children was a lie intended to fuel an irrational hatred of Ithacana, to turn us into fanatics who'd stop at nothing to bring our enemy down. But father was the villain. He is the oppressor Maradrina needs to rid itself of. We were deceived, Marilyn. Why can't you see that? No, Laura. You were deceived. Marilyn gave a pitying shake of her head, the back of her leg knocking against the bed. I've always seen clearly. You ask what I have to gain. I bring your heads back to Vencia, and father has promised to shower me with riches. If I hunt down our other wayward sisters, he will make me heir. I will be queen of Maradrina and master of the bridge, she smiled. Ithacana will be no longer. Rage consumed Laura like a sentient beast, prowling through muscle and tendon, making her fingers flex on the knife in her hand. Master Eric had always warned her that anger would make her sloppy, cause her to make mistakes. But he was a liar. Rage gave her focus, and it was that focus that caught the faint shifting of the sheets on the bed behind Marilyn, that allowed her to hear the faint hiss over the rapid beat of her heart. Auron, born and bred to this wild kingdom, heard it too. You're deluding yourself. Laura watched the shifting shape. Father knows that you're a mad dog, and once you've done his dirty work for him, he will have you put down. Or I could do it for him. She threw the knife. The blade sliced through the air, missing Marilyn, but sinking deep into the bed, the sheets now a flurry of motion. Lost your touch, her sister cackled, even as Auron leaned back, shoving his weight against her. They toppled against the bed, and the injured snake struck. Marilyn screamed as its teeth sank into her shoulder. Twisting, she released Auron and stabbed her blade into the snake, pinning its body to the mattress. Laura was already across the room. She slammed into Marilyn, sending them both rolling. They grappled, fists and feet flying with the intent to injure, maim, kill. Blow after blow, both of them equally well-trained. Yet when it came to this one thing, to violence, Laura had always been better. Catching Marilyn's head in a lock, Laura whispered, "You are queen of nothing." Then jerked her arms and snapped her sister's neck. The light went out of the other woman's eyes, and time seemed to stand still. How had it come to this? It seemed a lifetime ago that she'd made the decision to sacrifice herself in order to save her sisters, to be Maradrina's champion, to break the Bridge Kingdom. Everything had changed since then. Her beliefs, her allegiance, her dreams. Yet now one of her sisters lay dead at her hands, and Ithacana was on the brink of falling beneath Maradrina's yoke. Despite everything, her father had still won. What have you done? The horror in Auron's voice made her teeth clench. I didn't intend for this to happen. He had a machete in his hand, but his arm shook as he leveled it at her. Who are you? What are you? You know who I am. His breathing was ragged. Eyes never leaving her, he reached to retrieve the piece of paper that was Ithacana's damnation. Rereading the lines, his thoughts scorched across his face. They couldn't fight this. There was a commotion outside, the sounds of men shouting. I'm not leaving you behind to damn me further. Laura didn't fight as he bound her wrists with a tie for one of the drapes, or when he pulled a pillowcase over her head and dragged her out of the room. Even as soldiers spilled into the house, Ithacanian voices at first, then Maradrinian, then chaos. Screams cut the air, blades against blades, and she was jerked this way and that. Horns still sounded, filling the air with the call for aid that would never come. Night air filled her nose. Then she was falling, knees banging painfully against the steps, arms pulling her upright. And then they were running. Branches whipping her face, roots tripping her feet, the ground slick with mud. Hissed voices. This way! This way! The shouts of pursuit. Down! Down! Did you gag her? Her face pressed against the ground, wet earth seeping through the pillowcase. A rock dug into her ribs. Another pressed sharply against her knee. All of it felt distant, as though it were happening to her in a dream. Or to someone else. They carried on through the night, the heavy rain helping them avoid what seemed like countless Moradrinian soldiers hunting them across Midwatch, though logically she knew it couldn't be so many. By now her father's elite would have discovered Marilyn's body, and the absence of hers and Auron's. And there was no doubt that finding them would be nearly the same priority as taking the bridge itself. Only as dawn came, filtered gray through clouds, and the sodden fabric covering her face, did they take cover. There were familiar voices in the group, Jor and Leah, others from the honor guard. Her ears strained for Auron's, but not once did she pick it out amongst the whispers. Still, she was certain he was there, sensed his presence, felt the guilt and anger and defeat radiating from him in waves as he came to terms with the fall of his kingdom. Knew instinctively when he sent everyone away, so that he was alone with her. Laura waited a long time for him to speak, braced herself for the blame and accusations. Auron remained silent. When she could take it no more, Laura pushed upright, lifting her bound wrists to tug the pillowcase from her head, blinking in the dim light. Auron sat on a rock a few paces away, elbows braced on his knees, head hanging low. He was still shirtless, and the rain ran in torrents down his muscled back, washing away smears of blood and mud. A bow and quiver rested under the shelter of an overhang. A machete was belted at his waist. In his hand he held her knife, the one she'd thrown at the snake. And he was turning it over and over as though it were some artifact he'd never seen before. Did anyone get out? Her voice rasped like sandpaper over rough wood. To warn Southwatch. No. His hands stilled, the blade's keen edge glittering with rain. Terran tried. The Moradrinians used our own shipbreakers with shocking proficiency. She's dead. Sharp pain dug into Laura's stomach, her mouth tasting sour. Terran was dead. The woman who hadn't even wanted to be a soldier was dead, and it was because of her. I'm so sorry. He lifted his head, and Laura recoiled from the fury in his eyes. Why, you got everything you wanted. I didn't want this. Except she had, at one point, had wanted to shatter Ithacana. It had been that desire that had gotten them to this point, no matter how much she regretted it. Enough of your lies! He was on his feet in one smooth motion, stalking toward her, knife in hand. I may not have a full report yet, but I know the bridge has fallen to your father, using a plan to infiltrate our defenses that was better than I could have come up with myself. Your plan! As he raised his voice, she couldn't help but flinch, knowing they were still being hunted. I thought I destroyed all the evidence. I don't know how it got away from me. Shut up! He lifted the blade. My people are dead and dying because of you! The knife slipped from his fingers. Because of me! Wrenching the damning piece of paper out of his pocket. He held it up to her face. Not the side she'd written on, but the one he'd written, the script flowing and neat. Words extolling her father to reconsider his war with Valcata and to put his people before his pride. Her chest hollowed as she read the end. Let it be said, however, that should you seek to retaliate against your spy, Ithacana will take it as an act of aggression against its queen. And the alliance between our kingdoms will be irrevocably severed. Auron dropped to his knees in front of her, gripping the sides of her face, his fingers tangling in her hair. Tears glinted in his eyes.
I loved you. I trusted you. With myself. With my kingdom.
Loved. Past tense. Because she'd never deserved his love, and now she'd lost it for good.
And you were only using me, only pretending it was all an act, a ploy.
No, she wrenched the word from her lips. At first, yes, but after. Arin, I love you. Please believe that, if nothing else.
I used to wonder why you never said it.
Now I know. His grip on her face tightened, then he jerked his hands away. You say it now only because you're trying to save your own skin. That's not true. Explanations fought each other to make it out of her mouth first, ways to make him understand, ways to make him believe her. They all died on her lips as he fished the knife out of the mud.
I should kill you.
Her heart fluttered in her chest like a caged bird.
But despite everything, everything you've done, I don't have the balls to stick this blade in your black Maradrenian heart.
The knife sliced between her wrists, cutting the cord in one clean jerk.
He pressed the hilt into the palm of her hand. Go, run. I've no doubt that you'll make it off this island.
His jaw tightened.
It's in your nature to survive.
Laura stared at him, her lungs paralyzed. He wasn't letting her go. He was banishing her.
Please don't do this. I can fight. I can help you. I can...
Arin shoved her shoulders with enough force to send her stumbling back.
Go!
Then he reached down and retrieved his bow, knocking one of the black-fletched arrows. Holding her ground, she parted her lips, desperate not to lose the chance to undo the damage that she'd done, the chance to fight back against her father, to liberate Ithacana, to win Arin back.
Go!
He shouted the word at her, leveling the arrow at her forehead, even as tears poured down his cheeks.
I never want to see your face. I never want to hear your name. If there were a way to scour you from my life, I'd do it. But until I find the strength to put you in a goddamned grave, this is all I have. Now run!
His fingers quivered on the bowstring. He would do it,
and it would kill him.
Laura twisted in the mud, sprinting up the slope, her arms pumping. Her boots slipped and she slid as she jumped over fallen trees and slapped aside ferns. And stopped. Bracing a hand against a tree, she turned, in time to see his arrow shoot past her face, thudding into the tree next to her. She pressed a shaking hand against the line, scraped against her cheek, a trickle of blood running between her fingers. Eyes fixed on her, Arin pulled another arrow from his quiver, knocked it, and aimed the barbed tip. His lips moved.
Run.
She ran, never looking back again. Another. The barkeep raised one eyebrow over the mug he was polishing with a dirty rag, but made no comment as he refilled her glass with the swill this tap house passed off as wine. Not that it mattered. It wasn't as though she intended to savor it. Downing the contents in three gulps, Laura pushed the glass back across the bar.
Fill it. Pretty little girl like you could get herself in a bit of trouble drinking the way you do, miss.
Pretty little girl like me will cut the throat of anyone who gives her trouble. She gave him a smile that was all teeth. So how about you don't tempt fate, and you just hand over the bottle? She shoved a few coins, stamped with the Herondale King's face, in the man's direction.
Here.
Saves us having to exchange any more words tonight. Wiser than he looked, the barkeep only shrugged, took the coins, and handed her a bottle full of swill. But even drunk, she marked his words. Her face was familiar here. It was time to find a new watering hole to drown herself in every night.
Which was a shame. It smelled like spilled beer and vomit, but she'd grown fond of this place.
Drinking directly from the bottle, she blearily scanned the room, tables full of Herondale sailors dressed in baggy trousers, and those stupid floppy hats that never ceased to remind her of Arin. A trio of musicians played in the corner. No-nonsense women, carrying trays of steaming roast beef and rich soups to the patrons, the smell making her mouth water. A nod at one of the women had a bowl of soup arriving in front of her moments later. Here you are, Lara. Shit. It was time for her to move on. How long had she been in this town? 2 months? 3? In the haze of alcohol, she'd lost track of days, it feeling both like a lifetime and just yesterday that she'd dragged her battered boat onto a Harrendell beach, half-starved and her clothes still red with the blood of the Maradrinian soldiers she'd slaughtered to get herself off midwatch. The smell of soup tickled her nose, but her stomach soured and she shoved the bowl away, drinking from the bottle instead. The smart thing would be to move inland, north, and away from all those who knew and cared about Lara, the traitor queen of Ithacana. Her father's agents would be looking for her, maybe another one of her sisters for all she knew. And a drunken wreck like her was an easy mark. But she kept finding excuses not to go. The weather, the ease of stealing coin, the comfort of this shithole of a tap house. Except she knew the reason she stayed was because here, the news from Ithacana was on everyone's lips. Night after night, she sat at the bar, listening to the sailors chatter about this battle and that, hoping, praying the tides would turn, that rather than grumbles about the growing dominion of Maradrina, she'd hear that Arin was back in power, that Ithacana held the bridge once more. Wasted hopes. With every passing day, the news grew worse. No one in Harrendell was particularly pleased that Maradrina now controlled the bridge. Already the old men were bemoaning the good old days of Ithacanian efficiency and neutrality. And there was much chatter over the likelihood of the Harrendellian king taking action. Except even if he did, Lara knew it wouldn't be until after the storm season, 6 months from now. And by then it would be too late.
Battle with the Ithacanians, the king! Prisoner.
Laura's ears perked, unease pushing aside the haze of the wine. Turning to the table behind her, which was filled with a group of heavy-set men with equally heavy mustaches, she asked,
"What was that you said about the Ithacanian king?"
One of the men grinned lasciviously at her.
"Why don't you come over here and I'll tell you everything there is to know about the sorry sot?"
He patted one knee, which was coated with grease stains. Picking up her bottle, Lara swayed over to the table and set it down among their mugs.
"Here I am. Now what was it you were saying?"
The man patted his knee. She shook her head. "I'm fine on my feet, sir."
"I'd be better with that fine ass of yours on my lap."
His hand swung in a wide arc, cracking against her bottom, where it remained, his meaty fingers digging into her flesh. Lara reached behind, taking a firm grip on his wrist. The idiot had the nerve to smile. Pulling hard, she twisted, slamming his palm against the table, and a heartbeat later, embedding her dagger in it. The man squealed and tried to pull away, but the knife blade was stuck in the wood beneath his hand. One of the others reached for it, but fell back, nose broken. Another swung his fist at her face, but she dodged easily, the toe of her boot catching him in the groin. "Now," she rested one hand on the knife and gave it a gentle twist. "What was it you were saying about the king of Ithacana?"
"That he was captured in a skirmish with the Maradrinians."
The man was sobbing, squirming on his seat.
"He's being held prisoner in Vincia."
"Are you certain?"
"Ask anyone. The news just came in from Northwatch. Now, please."
Lara eyed him thoughtfully, nothing on her face betraying the terror rising in her guts. Jerking the knife free, she leaned down. "You slap another ass, I'll personally track you down and cut that hand off." Spinning on her heel, she nodded at the barkeep and strode out the door, barely feeling the rain that drove against her face. Arin had been captured. Arin was a prisoner. Arin was her father's hostage. The wind ripped and tore at her hair. The last thought replaying endlessly in her mind as Lara strode toward the boarding house, people leaping out of her way as she passed. Because there was only one reason her father would keep Auron alive. To use him as bait. Taking the steps two at a time, she unlocked the door to a room, slamming it behind her. Guzzling water straight from a pitcher, she stripped off the simple blue dress she wore and donned her Ithaconian clothes, swiftly packing her meager belongings into a sack. Then, a chip of charcoal in hand, she sat down at the table. The necklace was warm from resting against her skin, the emeralds and diamonds glittering in the candlelight. She had no right to wear it, but the thought of the necklace being stolen, of it being worn by anyone else, was unbearable. So she never took it off. She did so now. Laying the necklace on the paper, Laura traced the jewels with the charcoal, the haze from the wine slowly receding as she worked. When the drawing was complete, she returned the necklace to her throat and held up a complete map of Ithacana, her gaze fixed on the large circle to the west of the rest. This is madness, the logical part of her mind screamed. You can barely swim. You're a shit sailor, and it's the middle of storm season. But her heart, which had been a cold, smoldering thing since she'd ran from Auron on Midwatch, now burned with a ferocity that would not be denied. Tucking the map into her pocket, she belted on her weapons and stepped out into the storm. It took Laura 3 weeks to get there, and she nearly died a dozen times or more during the journey. Violent storms that chased her onto tiny islands, her screaming into the wind as she dragged her little boat above the storm surge. Fighting off snakes who thought to hide under the cover of her boat. Freak gusts of wind that tore at her singular sail and waves that swamped her, stealing away all her supplies. But they called her the little cockroach for a reason. And here she was. The skies were crystal clear, which likely meant the worst sort of storm was imminent, and the sun nearly blinded her with the glare off the waves. Her boat, the sail lowered, bobbed just beyond the shadow of the enormous volcano, the only sound the waves crashing against the cliffs. Laura stood, her knees shaking as she held onto the mast for balance. There was a glint of sunlight hitting glass from the depths of the jungle slopes, but even without it, she knew they were watching. "Open up!" she shouted. In answer, a loud crack split the air. Laura swore, watching as the boulder flew through the air toward her. It hit the water a few paces away, soaking her, the waves nearly flipping her boat. Climbing back to her feet from where she'd been cowering in the bottom, she dug her fingers into the mast, fighting to master her fear of the water all around. "Hear me out, Anna!" The other Ithaconians would have hit her on the first shot. Only the princess would bother to terrorize her first. "If you don't like what I have to say, you can throw me back into the sea." Nothing stirred. There was no sound other than the roar of the ocean. Then a rattle split the air, the distinctive sound of the gates to Arenal opening. Picking up her paddle, Laura began rowing. Familiar faces filled with cold fury met her as the boat knocked against the steps. She didn't fight as Jor jerked her out by the hair, the stone stairs biting into her shins as he dragged her up. "I'd cut your heart out here and now, if not for the fact Anna deserves the honor." He pulled a hood over her head, obscuring her vision. They took her to the palace, the sounds and smells painfully familiar, and as she counted the steps and turns, Laura knew she was being taken to the council room. Someone, probably Jor, kicked the backs of her knees once they entered, and she fell, palms slapping against the ground.
"You have a lot of nerve coming back. I'll give you that."
The hood was ripped from her head. Pushing upright, Laura met Anna's gaze, her stomach tightening at the cruel scar that now ran from the midpoint of the woman's forehead down to her cheekbone. That she hadn't lost her eye was a miracle. Surrounding her were some half a dozen soldiers, all who bore the marks of having barely escaped Southwatch with their lives. And behind them, hanging on the wall, was a large map of Moradrina.
"Give me one good reason why I shouldn't slit your throat, you traitorous bitch!"
Laura forced a smile onto her face. "It's not very creative." A boot caught her in the ribs, flipping her over. Pressing a hand against her side, Laura cast a dark look at Nana, whose boot it had been, before returning her attention to the woman in power.
You won't slit my throat because my father has Auron as his prisoner. Anna's jaw tightened. A fact that does not help your cause. We need to get him back. We? The princess's voice was incredulous. Your father has Auron inside his palace in Vencia, which I'm sure you know is a veritable fortress guarded by the elite of the Maradrenian army. My best haven't been able to so much as get inside. Every one of them has died trying. By all means, humor me with why you will be any help at all. Will you seduce your way in, whore? Laura stared her down, the silence hanging in the room stifling. For 15 years, she'd trained how to infiltrate an impenetrable kingdom, how to discover weakness and exploit them, how to destroy her enemies, how to be merciless. She'd been born for this. Yet Laura said nothing because words would not convince these people who believed, rightly, that she was a liar. Breathe in. Breathe out. She moved. These were battle-hardened warriors, but the element of surprise was hers. And she was what she was. Holding nothing back, she whirled, fists and feet a blur as she disarmed the soldiers around her, knocking them down, driving them back. Anna launched at her with a scream, but Laura snaked a foot around her leg and rolled with her, coming up with the tall princess in a chokehold, the other woman's knife in her free hand. Silence filled the room, the warriors regaining their feet and eyeing her with a new and healthy respect, even as they considered how they could disarm her. Laura cast her eyes around the room, meeting each gaze individually before releasing Anna's throat. The other woman rolled away, gasping, eyes full of shock. Laura rose to her feet. You need me because I know our enemy. I was raised by them to be their greatest weapon. And you've seen firsthand what I can do. What they never considered is that their greatest weapon might turn on them. And Laura wasn't the only weapon they'd created. There were 10 other young women out there who owed her a life debt, which she fully intended to call due. You need me because I am the queen of Ithacana. Twisting, she threw the knife in her hand, watching as it embedded in the map, marking Vencia and Auron with perfect precision. And it's time my father was brought to his knees.
This has been an Audible Originals production of The Bridge Kingdom, Book 1 of the Bridge Kingdom series, written by Danielle L. Jensen, performed by Lauren Fortgang and James Patrick Cronin. Executive producers David Blum, Elizabeth Scholar, and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Editorial producer Jessica Allman Galland. Edited by Chris Howerton. Mixed and mastered by Tim Kim. Copyright 2018 by Danielle L. Jensen. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.